You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Daniel Rue, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. With the Warriors' second off day and the transition from January to February, I wanted to bring back the kind of combination podcast that I've been doing the last few months, which is a schedule analysis and then the four factors going through where the Warriors are relative to this point last year and also relative to the rest of the league, because both of those things matter. And I'm going to start with schedule analysis, especially because that part is actually done. The Warriors, you know, because their January schedule is done, whereas with four factors, still a little bit of time left. And I always like to start this with back-to-backs, because back-to-backs are the most central of the schedule-related issues. And in January, the Warriors only had two back-to-backs. They had the one a little bit earlier where they were in Orlando and then in Miami with that strange early game, and then the more recent one with the Clippers and the Blazers. And the Warriors went 12-2 in January. One of their two losses was on the second end of a back-to-back. That was the loss in Miami to the Heat. Not arguably, their most surprising loss, because, I mean, Miami is, even though they're on this eight-game winning streak, they're still worse than Memphis, which was the Warriors' other loss. And the Warriors did not play a single team that was on the second end of a back-to-back, so there's no real need to talk about that from that component. And in a surprising, Warriors fans will call it encouraging development, the Warriors actually have a pretty significant advantage in terms of back-to-backs in February. February is a weird month for the NBA because due to the All-Star break, there are fewer games overall, but the schedule makers often pack it in a little bit because they know the guys have a week off. So the Warriors face five opponents who play the night before, including their first three of the month. And that starts on Wednesday against the Hornets. And of those five games, only one of them is one where the Warriors also are on a back-to-back. So those are four where they have an advantage. They play 12 games in the month. So that is a pretty impressive line in terms of that, because that means it's a third of their games. They have this big advantage of being more, not only more rested, but the opponent on a back-to-back. The Warriors have three back-to-backs themselves. One of them is the one that's coming up right away with Charlotte and the Clippers, where they travel down to LA to face the Clippers. Then they have Memphis and Oklahoma City, which is the Kevin Durant return game. Not really sure why the schedule makers wanted to put that huge game, make it a back-to-back, makes it a little bit different. And then at the very end of the month, they fly from Philly to Washington, D.C., and that will be their last one. So 5-3 is a pretty significant advantage, especially when the Warriors have been so good this year in those sorts of circumstances. And that leads straight into rest advantage. And rest advantage, I think of pretty robotically. It's just, did one team have more rest than the other team? There are arguments about residuals. And also, I am not considering the All-Star break for this. So if one team plays on Wednesday before the All-Star break and the other one plays on Thursday, I don't care a week later whether they had one more day off or not. That's the same. But so I zero that out, just like I zero out the start of the season. And in January, the Warriors came into it with this pretty impressive 12-1 record in games where they had more rest than their opponents. And they only had one in January where that was still true, and they moved to 13-1. It was the big, big win over Cleveland. So they're 13-1 on the season when they have a rest advantage. And they were 3-1 with a rest disadvantage, that one loss being the game against Miami because they were on a back-to-back and Miami was not. And then 8-1 when neither team had a rest advantage. So that's just incredibly impressive to go through it in that way, to do well when you have the advantage, do well when you have the disadvantage, and then to keep it going to be 8-1 when it's even. And as you could guess from the Warriors having fewer back-to-backs than their opponents, they have a really nice advantage in terms of rest. So they'll play just two games with a rest disadvantage, and those are the back-to-backs later in the month. Then they have five games that are neutral and five games with a rest advantage, all of which are really favorable for that reason, including those two early back-to-backs, the one Charlotte, and I believe it's, and then there's their third game of the month, which I'm currently blanking on what it is. Oh yeah, Chicago. So when the Bulls come, that'll be another big rest advantage game, because I think that's a +2, where Chicago, because they're on the West Coast, they're going through it, they're playing games more frequently, the Warriors have a long time off. And another scheduling quirk, their long time off is coming from a game in Sacramento, where presumably they'll just come home that night, night. So it's nominally a road game, and it is a road game in terms of the crowd, but they'll be able to sleep in their own beds the night before and the night of. So that's a real big help for them. And the rest advantage is, you know, it's not going to be determinative in terms of, oh, they're going to win this game or not win this game because of it, but it also provides a level of stability and comfort. And it explains some of the biggest blowouts that happen are when a team has a big advantage there. And then the last part of this is the front end of a back-to-back. It was something I threw in the original iteration of this column and podcast, and ended up becoming something really fascinating, not because of the Warriors part of it, but because of the other teams. So before January, Warriors opponents, so the teams who played the Warriors one night and then played the next night were 2-8 on the season before January. And that included some really surprising losses. Toronto losing in Phoenix, the Blazers losing in Phoenix, the Cavs on Boxing Day, which they sat all their guys, so that's not as big a deal. In January, it was a 2-2 split, so not the same pronounced dynamic. Houston, again, Houston has two of the four wins on back-to-backs because they had another one. I believe this one was against Memphis, which was pretty impressive. And then Portland won, while Denver and Detroit lost the next night. So it's 4-10 for the season in terms of teams that play the Warriors, then play the next night. And the current expectation is probably that that will go to 4-12, because the two times that happens in February are the Clippers playing the Warriors at Oracle for the last time, then flying home to Staples and playing the Spurs. So we don't know if Chris Paul is going to be healthy. It's later in the month. He might be back, but the Spurs are really good. So you have that. And then the other one is the Washington Wizards have a home road back-to-back, so they host the Warriors, then fly to Toronto to face the Raptors. And the Wizards have been a wonderful home team, but not as great on the road. Both of those are certainly games that the team on the back-to-back can certainly win, but they're underdogs in probably each of those, depending on what happens with the Clippers' health. And so we'll see how that happens moving forward. And the Warriors, as I mentioned, they have three back-to-backs, and we'll see how they do on the front ends and the back ends of those moving forward. That is enough of the schedule analysis, but move on to four factors. This is inspired by Dean Oliver's great book, Basketball on Paper, and he lists in that the four, basically the way that he describes successful basketball teams: shooting, turnovers, rebounding, and free throws, getting to the line and everything like that. And I like to go through those as a way of calibrating where the Warriors are. And the most important of them is shooting, using effective field goal percentage, which acknowledges the difference between twos and threes. It's a better number for that purpose, as well as many others. And the Warriors at the beginning of January were in a really good position where they were first in offensive EFG and second in opponent, so defensive, and they're in exactly the same spot right now. They are first at a level that's 2% clear of the Houston Rockets and a little bit ahead of last year's point. They're at 56.8% right now. They were 56.5% last year, and they ended up leading the league. So great there. Defensively, they're only behind the Jazz. And it's a great way of looking at how much better the league has been offensively this year. It's a surprising development in terms of the degree. But the Warriors' effective field goal percentage, opponent effective field goal percentage of 48.1, is second behind the Jazz and would have been seventh at this point last season. So even comparing apples to apples in terms of same point in the season, still pretty significant difference. But in the most important of the elements, the Warriors are doing an absolutely great job of getting good shots, making good shots, and forcing opponents to take hard shots, and they're missing a fair amount of them. Turnovers are a less rosy story. The Warriors have improved from where they were last month. They've gone from 20th to 18th, and that's also better than where they were at this point last year. But it's still, you know, not great. It's still below average. And they have improved a little bit slightly as well on the defensive end. They've ended up now, they're in 14th place, which is pretty good. You know, not unbelievable. So they're forcing 14.5% turnovers. So that means on about one out of every eight possessions, they've been forcing a turnover, which is pretty good. You know, it's not perfect. It's not as good as the best teams in the league, but it's not a weakness anymore. And moving from below average to average or a little bit above it in the case of defensive turnover rate, forcing turnovers, is notable. It's not perfect, but improvement is good, and improving from below average to about average is a nice development for the Warriors, especially when you take it in the context of how well they've been doing in terms of shooting defense, so making sure that teams take bad shots, because that's another way that you can get at the same, kind of get at this, a similar point. And improving in one and being really good in the other certainly helps. And they also need that because they have been continuing to struggle in terms of rebounding. I'm actually going to start with the defensive glass in this way because it connects with what we just talked about before. They have moved up from 24th in the league to 21st over the course of this month, but they're still behind last season's pace when they were 18th. And this is around the time, so January and then into February, where the Warriors really started to fall off as a defensive rebounding team last year. And that was due to Festus Ezeli playing most of the beginning part of the year and then missing a lot of the second half of the year. So it's not a huge deal, but it is still concerning. And last month, I talked a little bit about how the death lineup, this year's version of it, was not doing a great job on the defensive glass. They were only getting 71.2% of available defensive rebounds. That is awful. And it's dropped. They're at 69% now. So it's dropped almost, it's dropped more than 2%, which is not great. It's a it is a problem, but at the same time, that group is still outscoring opponents by 25.3 points per 100 possessions. So kind of have to take it with a grain of salt. And if you are one of those who believe that 69% is so bad that you're almost definitely going to improve on it, then it might even be less of a concern, because if they're doing that well at this point, elements like that should regress to the mean at least a little bit, and that helps. Offensive glass, it's about the same as where it was as was last month. They've moved from 19th to 18th, but they were better last year. Again, going back to the same Festus Ezeli thing, he actually made a much bigger difference on the offensive glass than the defensive glass, where last year at this point, the Warriors were 12th. So not amazing, but also not terrible, not at the level of like the New Orleans Pelicans, who've been one of the worst. I think that actually they're still the worst defense or offensive rebounding team of all time at this point, because they've been putting so many of their resources into getting back on defense with former Warriors assistant Alvin Gentry. That's a priority that they've done. The Warriors have not gone in that direction, and they can get better. I think both JaVale McGee and Zaza Pachulia have some good moments on the offensive glass. And the Warriors don't want to prioritize it, but staying around league average is probably enough. And then the final of the four factors is free throw attempt rate, because so it's measuring free throw attempts versus field goal attempts. Kevin Durant was supposed to be a significant change here, and the Warriors have had a few games that really did swing on getting to the free throw line. Charlotte was a big one there, where Durant and Klay Thompson both got to the line a lot. The Warriors got into the bonus early against the Miami Heat as well. Wasn't enough to win them the game, but they got back close. They actually tied the game, and then Dion Waiters hit that game winner. A lot of that was free throw attempt rate. However, they're still not, they haven't improved off of where they were. They finished last year at 25th, and they're 19th now, but they were 20th at this point last season. So it is a little bit better, but not a whole lot. And that's concerning, because last year, while they were also the target of a little bit more hacking, just because sometimes Andrew Bogut would be out there, it wasn't that much. And now they have players like Zaza Pachulia, who actively tries to get to the line and does a decent job of that at points. And the Warriors would be helped so much if they could increase this. I would argue that it's the greatest point of improvement that they have, because their personnel could be better at it than they are. And many fans will argue that they should be getting more calls, and getting more calls would certainly help. Not going to discount that at all. But being more assertive would help as well, especially when games get a tight whistle. I've talked about this at various points on the podcast, but the Warriors, by and large, are hurt by a tight whistle because they don't play in a way to take advantage of it as much as their opponents, which against Cleveland ended up mattering a lot at various points in the finals, and mattered a lot in the Christmas Day game after it got a little bit feisty. So we'll watch it moving forward. It would be a great thing for the Warriors to get to the line a little bit more, but they're also doing a good job preventing, you know, mitigating fouls on the defensive end. They're 8th in opposing free throw attempt rate, which is closely in line to where they were last year. They were 10th at this point and moved up to 8th, so their final position was the same as their current position. And being in the top half, close to the top quarter, is a really good place for them. They're probably not going to ever reach the level of those top teams that are so zealous about not committing fouls. Cleveland is up there, the Spurs, the Hawks, those type of teams where it is really a design imperative. And you can see that also with the Spurs and the Hawks, considering Budenholzer was a longtime lieutenant under Greg Popovich. The Warriors just don't have that type of personnel. They're not going to go in that direction. But being just below those teams is a really nice step, and sticking there, because it's another way that opponents can get to the line a lot. So keeping the opposing field goal percent, effective field goal percentage strong, and not fouling that much, even those two things in concert can help sustain a strong defense, even if the defensive rebounding is not where it needs to be and they're not forcing as many turnovers as the best teams in the league. So the overall picture is pretty good. It's not as overtly dominant as the rosiest concepts of this team would be, especially in terms of getting to the line. But when the Warriors have the best record in the league, when they have the number one offense and the number two, actually I think they're number one and number one right now, but when you're at that point, not hitting every single element in the four factors is certainly not the biggest deal in the world. So again, tomorrow the Warriors are back to playing. They actually have games again. They will play the Charlotte Hornets, who fell today to the Portland Trailblazers in Portland, and then they're traveling. A big thing to watch is if the Warriors can take advantage early. They also might be playing without Stephen Curry, Zaza Pachulia, or both. As of this moment, both of them are questionable. Zaza, I believe, has a strained shoulder. Curry is still sick. So we will see what happens there. While this is not a good time for injuries in the sense that David West is still out, considering where the other teams in the West and in the East are, getting to try some different configurations in the starting lineup, if Curry were back and Zaza Pachulia were out, I would be fascinated to see how Kerr handles that. I would guess that they would go with JaVale as the starting center. It's what makes the most sense and would be a worthwhile test to see. So you never want anybody to be hurt, but they can maximize the opportunity, do the best with the silver linings that they have, and we'll see. We'll talk about it tomorrow night. And if you want to support the show, you can do so by leaving a rating, leaving a review in the podcast player of your choice. You can subscribe, download every episode, and if you have any feedback, good, bad, or indifferent, DannyLaRueNBA@gmail.com or at DannyLarue on Twitter, DannyLaRueX. My promise, as always, I read everything. I care. I can't always respond timely. I have a lot of stuff to do, especially right now as the CBA just came out and have trade deadline work to do. Dunked On, we've been hammering that out and everything else. So that is really where things are. But I do read it, and it is very important to me. So if you want to share it, you obviously can. And if you want to check out other Locked On podcasts, the Raiders are going through all the drama in Vegas. You can check out Locked On Raiders. The Niners are probably about to hire a new coach, though that probably will not be announced until Monday. And Locked On NBA, David Locke's doing great work. Locked On Fantasy Basketball and all the other teams in football, basketball are worth taking a look at. So you can check those out as well. Thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.